Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We've heard the term sickle cell disease for many, many decades. But if you don't have it, or if you don't know someone who does, you probably don't know a lot about it. Well, September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month. And on this Medical Monday, we are taking a closer look at the disease. My guests are Dr. James Taylor, Director of the Howard University Center for Sickle Cell Disease, Dr. Emmanuel Tay, a Howard University sickle cell researcher, and Chadrick Garrick. He is a sickle cell patient. He's also a Howard University student. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Certainly, you're welcome to tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Guys, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So let me start with you, Dr. Taylor. Can you talk to us a little bit about what sickle cell is, because so many people have not heard that much about it, generations, in fact. Give us kind of a working definition.
So, sickle cell is a mutation in a hemoglobin molecule, which makes your red cells inflexible, and they clog up the bloodstream, and they cause excruciating pain, in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. It is primarily in people of African descent, and it evolved in Africa to protect people who live there from malaria, which is a terrible disease that kills young children.
Mm-hmm. We, as I mentioned, we've been hearing so much about this. I know when I was growing up as a kid, we heard so much more than we do now. Why is that? Why are we hearing little or nothing about sickle cell now?
I think we've lost the initiative. Back in the 70s, there was a great amount of movement with the Black Panthers and Roland B. Scott here at Howard University that really enacted legislation. It took legislation to really focus on sickle cell. In the last 30 and 40 years, we've lost our initiative and kind of lost our pathway towards doing something about this.
Mm-hmm. Chadrick, what is life like for you? And when did you first discover that you had this health issue?
Okay. So I was diagnosed as a toddler. So I'm actually from Jamaica. So my mother took me to Bustamante Hospital in Kingston. She was apparently, around 4 years old. I was, having excruciating pain. She took me. I was diagnosed, and I can't really remember, the earliest instance of having pain. I just know that it's been with me for as long as I can remember, pretty much, my life has pretty much been like, having like second guess my physical capabilities, or having people place limitations on me, as a child, wanting to go outside to play, or like play in the rain, and having, your family members tell you that you're fragile,
Okay.
So that's pretty much what sickle cell is like.
For someone who does not know, what does the pain feel like? And do you feel fragile?
Let's see. I don't remember how I've described it to my doctors before. At times it feels like let's say it's affecting my legs, right? It feels like a car is being, like I'm being ran over by a car.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
It's it'll last about like, you know, a week or two if I don't go to the hospital. You know, that's how it was when I was younger. You know, I'd have no appetite. I wouldn't sleep, you know, at most for an hour. You know, I would just be screaming the entire night.
That does sound really, really difficult. What brings on these episodes, Dr. Taylor, and how is it treated?
We have no idea why these episodes, they happen suddenly and unexpectedly and usually at the worst possible time. I think the way it's been described to me, my former boss had a patient once who had a compound leg fracture, which is where your leg is snapped in two.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked the patient, how bad is this compared to a sickle cell crisis? And he said it was almost as bad as a sickle cell crisis. Well, and I think Chadwick recognizes what that means in a way that I will never know. Mm-hmm. We don't know why these episodes occur. Our treatments right now are entirely supportive. We treat people with morphine, dilaudid, hydromorphone, methadone, all the big powerful opioids that we're hearing about with the opioid crisis. We use them day in, day out for sickle cell treatment. Mm.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about sickle cell disease. September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month, and we're taking a closer look on this Medical Monday. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810. Donald calling from Upper Marlboro. Donald, what's on your mind?
Hello, my name is Daryl. How you doing, Mr. Fisher?
I'm doing just fine, Daryl. Go ahead.
Yes, I tuned in. I just cut my radio on because my son is right now in Frederick Memorial Hospital, and I'm just pulling up to the hospital because he's in a sickle cell crisis. He's 24, and he lost his right eye to sickle cell when he was in ninth grade. I actually know the doctor who was on the phone at Howard because my son has been there numerous of times. I'm in support of anything that anyone can do to help sickle cell. And in fact, I'm actually going to run around the Capitol Beltway, for sickle cell patients just to have awareness to it. My son is 24. Like I said, he's a strong young man, but he's been going through this his entire life. And it's right now his hemoglobin is a 7, and I'm on my way walking in now to discuss a blood transfusion for him because he's in excruciating pain.
Well, Daryl, thank you so much, and I appreciate your phone call, and we certainly wish you the best and your son the best of health, and thank you for calling. Which brings to this conversation, Dr. Taylor, there's an event coming up, just as Daryl was just suggesting. He's trying to do something to support research and the like. Talk to me briefly about this event, and after that, I want to talk to Dr. Tay about research, but please go right ahead.
So on Saturday, September 29th, we're having our Sickle Cell Move On event. This is our Howard University Hospital recognition event to support sickle cell research and clinical care and to raise awareness. This will be a morning event starting at 9 a.m. We're going to have a 3K walk run. You can do Zumba, and we'll have a boot camp for those of you who are really adventurous. And for the little ones, we have a sickle cell kids zone with you can stomp on bouncy rooms and stomp out sickle cell that way.
Dr. Tay, when it comes to research, what are you looking for?
To follow up on what Chadwick and Dr. Taylor emphasized, so mainly the sickle cell is overshadowed by the pain crisis, and we're now focusing on the other organ damages that eventually will follow as patients live longer with the current treatments that we have right now. So we are focusing on studying the effect that sickle cell has on kidneys. As patients, it's a blood disease, so your blood goes through your kidneys. And as Dr. Taylor mentioned, there is a blockage of your blood vessels, which eventually affects your kidneys too. And the laboratory measures that we have right now are not really measuring what goes on in sickle cell patients. So what we're looking for is how to catch these kidney diseases or malfunctions before it's too late in a sickle cell patient. So that would be one less problem that they have to live with.
Mm-hmm. So some sickle cell patients look perfectly fine, mm-hmm. but their kidneys are not fine, and we want to identify early markers mm-hmm. so that we can institute treatment instead of saying, I feel fine, I don't need any treatment. We want to do something before you get really sick.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about sickle cell disease. Damien calling from Charles County. Damien, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I was diagnosed with the sickle cell trait when I first started boot camp for the Navy mm-hmm. in 93. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't too happy to hear the way, you know, the military explains it, but there was a gentleman that had the actual trait too as well, and he kind of in a roundabout way told me, you know, things that goes on with sickle cell trait. So what they explained in the military was that, like, when you have the trait, you can have a cut or something, but normally people will heal from the outside in. But with, like, the sickle cell trait, it was the exact opposite. You heal from the inside out. And I was informed in order to make sure that when I've had kids, when which now I have a son and four daughters, 17, 11, 9, and a set of twins that are 6,
wow.
to make mm-hmm. sure that my significant other was not.
That she didn't have the trait.
Too.
Well, thank you so much, Damien, for sharing that with us, because that was one of the issues that I did want to get to. Talk to me about the trait, Dr. Taylor, versus having the disease.
So this is an inherited disease, and that means that you have to get one copy of sickle hemoglobin from your mom and one copy from your dad. Having one copy is sickle cell trait. It's really not a disease, but as the gentleman referred to in the military, if you're involved in heavy physical exercise, you are at risk for heat stroke. And if you develop heat stroke, you're at risk for malignant heat stroke with sickle cell trait. Very rarely it can result in sudden death. It was described in military trainees, and the military has taken a great approach to this. They ask everyone to hydrate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and with that said, Chadrick,
yep.
what can you not do? I mean, you look fit. You're a young guy. You look like you could, you know, do a 10-minute mile, push-ups, the whole bit, just like any other, you know, co-ed running around on campus. Can you just decide if you want to go to the gym and lift weights or get on the treadmill? Can you do that, or are there certain things that you have to do first, or not at all?
Well, you know, just so the listeners know, there are mild cases of sickle cell. So there's SS, there's SC, which I have, which is the milder version of it, if you can call it mild. In my case, I actually, as a teenager, you know, after having those difficulties, while also having a desire to, you know, to run fast,
and to do,
you know,
all
be
things,
strong,
yeah.
you know what I mean,
yeah.
and beat the kids like down the block, you know, I made a decision to start running track around 17. You know, after just getting frustrated, like playing with the kids and like being tired or like having a sickle cell crisis come on because of overexertion, you know, and just, you know, I just remember running down a block and being winded, you know.
Okay. But not necessarily pain,
yeah.
just
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, but depending on the weather, you know, I do that, or I play a little too rough. Mm-hmm. I would definitely be going to the ER.
I see. Yeah. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about sickle cell. We're going to talk to Denise calling from Waldorf, Laverne calling from Bowie, and Fee calling from Baltimore. So please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. And we're still taking your phone calls as well. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. And for those of you that are interested in participating in that sickle cell event coming up on September 29th, the website is alum.howard.edu/stompoutsicklecell. I know that's hard to remember. And as always, we'll make sure it's posted on our website, whur.com, after 8:30 tonight. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, Deborah 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. September is Sickle Cell Awareness Month, and on this Medical Monday, we're taking a closer look at the disease. My guests are Dr. James Taylor, Director of the Howard University Center for Sickle Cell Disease, Dr. Emmanuel Tay, a Howard University Sickle Cell Researcher, and Chadrick Garrick. He is a sickle cell patient and a Howard University student. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Fee calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold.
Hi.
Thank you so much. I just moved to the Baltimore area from L.A., and I absolutely love your show, and this is such a timely topic.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I did not know that September was Sickle Cell Month, and I'm appreciative of this information. I had no idea that people experience pain. And I wanted to share something, and then you kind of, your guest kind of touched on the subject of the trait, having the trait.
Mm-hmm.
So I just start with my first question to your guest. And thank you, Chadrick, for sharing your story, by the way. Is it true that if a man and a woman who both have the trait procreate, then the child has a greater chance of being born with the disease?
So you have a 1 in 4 chance with each pregnancy of having a child with sickle cell disease. And so I would encourage two people who have sickle cell trait or something else to see a genetic counselor or a physician like myself. In vitro fertilization is a great way to avoid having a child with sickle cell disease. The worst thing about having a child with sickle cell disease is that as a parent, you will sit in the hospital with your child and watch them in pain. And I can't imagine anything worse than that as a parent.
Now, if we're talking about a set of parents, both of whom have the trait, why would in vitro with that those same parents make a difference?
So you can do pre-implant, you do test tube fertilization, and you can do pre-implantation genetic testing on the fertilized eggs and pick the ones that don't have the disease.
Oh, okay.
People do this all the time for other reasons. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great reason to do it.
That's interesting. I mean, I wasn't familiar. Fee, you had another question?
Yes. Growing up, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, and I had a cousin who had sickle cell anemia. And I remember being told that he wasn't going to live to be an old man. But I do remember, I don't remember hearing that he experienced pain. He seemed like a very normal and well-adjusted kid. He was my favorite cousin. But I've been very familiar with the disease, and I agree that it's kind of gone under the radar. People aren't talking about it, and we definitely need to talk about it. Again, I'm really appreciative of this topic, and thank you. I won't be in town for the the event on the 29th, but I will connect with the website to learn how I can get involved and educate myself and share with my community. So thank you, Harold.
Well, thank you, Fee. I appreciate the phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Laverne calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Laverne. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I'd like to say hello to your guests. I am late coming into your program, so I don't know if this subject has been touched on. I had two nephews with sickle cell. One had sickle cell thalassemia, and I'm not sure the other. But up until 2012, August 2012, one of them was involved in a clinical trial at NIH, and he had donated himself to these various clinical trials and spent at least the last 10 years of his life in those clinical trials. And he was up for like the third or fourth person to get the cure for sickle cell through his bone marrow transplant from his mother. But just 4 days before he was to have the transplant, he passed away. So can your doctors speak on what they know about the clinical trials and the work that was done at least through 2012? I'm not sure what happened after that about the transplant.
And certainly if Dr. Tay has something to offer in reference to that, please join in. But Dr. Taylor, please.
So I was actually working at the NIH in those days, and I probably saw this individual. I was not involved in the transplant program, but I was one of the first physicians. If you had sickle cell, you would see me. That is, we don't know, we don't have a cure today. Bone marrow transplantation works, but it's a 1 in 4 chance that one of your siblings would be a match. It works the same odds as having sickle cell disease, a 1 in 4 chance. To expand the donor pool, so it turns out that only 16% of people have a match, given our family sizes in the United States. And to expand the donor pool, parents are a half match. And that was a trial that is trying to use half-match transplants. They don't work as well, but eventually we may get this right, and it may be a curative therapy. Still highly experimental.
Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add to that, Dr. Tay?
No, that's it.
Oh. Well, the other thing that the caller was referring to, and someone else mentioned that, I think it was the guy who called where he said his son was in the hospital, and he mentioned a blood transfusion. Is that a common practice?
That can be a common practice for a variety of reasons. You can come into the hospital, and at baseline, it's called sickle cell anemia for a reason. You have low blood counts, half normal, essentially. And if you're really in a bad crisis, you may require blood. And we also, about 10% of sickle cell patients have strokes and require transfusions every month. We have a whole group of patients that come in once a month and receive blood transfusions. So if you will, it's a temporary cure to replace their sickle cell blood with normal blood.
Mm-hmm. Carla, thank you so much for your...
I have one other point.
Well, quickly, because I've got a lot of calls on the line. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just want to give honor to the research scientists at NIH. They did a wonderful job. My nephew's name was Khaled Bradley, and he spent a lot of time at NIH participating in all type of protocols to help them understand better about sickle cell. Thank you.
Well, thank you. So you are familiar with Mr. Bradley.
I knew Mr. Bradley very well. In fact, I think I was at his funeral.
Mm. That kind of caring is important for people to know, because this is not only a long-term issue, not only for individual patients, but obviously as a health concern for the nation and obviously specific communities. Let's go to Denise calling from Waldorf. Denise, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm glad you're having this conversation. My grandson is just a little, almost a year and a half, and he has sickle cell. Mm-hmm. And I was calling to find out, like the caller before said, I had heard about bone marrow transplant, and that is a cure. And I had also heard that in Europe they had done I think, a stem cell transplant, which cured a person. And I was wondering, is there any research going on in that area also?
So in Europe, currently, there's a trial for gene therapy where they take out the patient's stem cells and put in a normal hemoglobin gene with a virus and then reinfuse the stem cells with a bone marrow transplant. That's the case, the curative case that she's referring to. Still highly experimental. Gene therapy has had some issues in the past 20 years. We're really hoping that this will be a good thing. We'll see what happens. And this is why research is so important. If we don't do the experiment, we don't know what works.
And to that point, because often when we hear about bone marrow transplants, we hear about leukemia and other forms of cancer. If you have a match, a perfect match, and there is a successful bone marrow transplant between a sickle cell patient and someone who does not have it, is that curative?
So a transplant is a cure with quotes okay. around it. You're still on medications. You still need to come and see the doctor. However, right 10 years ago, one of my patients, he had called me and said, should I go for this transplant? I have a sibling who's a match. I told him to go for it. I had seen the data. It looked really promising, but I did say it's experimental. I saw him 2 years later with his wife, mm-hmm. and he was 52 at the time, and he said, my life is so much better than mm-hmm. it was. I just can't imagine why I waited so long.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, caller. I appreciate your phone call. Let's go to Thomas, calling from Colorado. Thomas, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. My name is Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from the Baltimore, D.C. area. I met my high school sweetheart had sickle cell anemia. And in the 70s or early 80s, Europe didn't have any of that special research that was going on. And her doctor from Johns Hopkins, he kind of recommended that she not have a child, but I mean, we had two, and she passed after the second one.
Mm.
But everything that's been said has been pretty much dead on. But I know, I mean, we got some young men there, but I think that it's even harder for the women mm. that have it. My children have yeah. the trait, and and both of my sons in their 30s, they crossed over in their selection of women to probably try to eliminate that. But for the most part, they kind of, I mean, with just having the trait and not having too many symptoms, it's kind of like in denial. My oldest son don't even really want to talk about it mm. because, I mean, it's in denial.
I see.
My youngest son, he has a tattoo of his mother on his ribs,
mm-hmm.
reminding that, I mean, because I tell him that she gave up her life that she may defy the odds and be a woman mm-hmm. in her mind.
Well, let me see.
It wasn't available.
I appreciate what you're sharing with us, and I think that's it's an important point. Let me see what Dr. Tay has to say, because Dr. Tay, and thank you, caller Thomas, calling from Colorado. He when he mentioned women, you kind of nodded. What are your thoughts on how this impacts women versus men?
I think Dr. Taylor could speak about this more. He's in the clinic. He has seen the clinical side more than I do. But if you portion in women with childbirth and all the complications that you get from sickle, having just a sickle cell or a pain crisis from sickle cell on top of bearing a child, you can factor in that. And when it comes to the relationship that our caller mentioned, most of these things are a burden of a woman when it comes to this relationship. And that's why we need to talk about sickle cell disease or sickle cell anemia, because it affects our communities. And Dr. Taylor will go over that, but this we need to talk about it. We need to go into our legislators and work with this, and that's how we can push on our research and reach out to our communities.
And try to keep it in the forefront and try to raise awareness.
This is something that affects majority, like a good portion of our community. So we need to talk about it. And thanks for having us and putting this on the radio.
Absolutely. I want to follow up with that question about women, childbirth, and the like. But I need to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about that. Also, Teresa calling from, I believe that's Gambrills, Maryland. Teresa, we're going to talk to you next. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about sickle cell disease. What do you know about it? What would you like to know about it? We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about Sickle Cell Awareness Month, the month of September, on this Medical Monday. We are taking a closer look at the disease. Let me go back to the phone lines. Teresa calling from Gambrills, Maryland. Teresa, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay. I'm calling to let y'all know my granddaughter beat lupus and sickle cell. She had the disease when she was 2 years old, and now she's a regular, normal teenager. My follow-through from Children's Hospital in Washington, D.C., where my granddaughter was one out of so many millions that had both diseases at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Rhiannon does not have a trace of lupus, nor a trace of sickle cell.
So how was that? How was that possible, Teresa?
It was fusion. It was advanced therapy that she went through, and I am so glad. She's had it since the doctors told us that she wasn't going to make it past 2 years of age.
How old is she now?
Is 15. Mm-hmm. Rhiannon is a normal, healthy, teenage, young lady. She's in school. She does whatever teenagers do, she does. Mm-hmm. My daughter and my son-in-law, they stayed on top. My daughter stayed on top of everything that she has. A folder book from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. Rhiannon does not have lupus, and Rhiannon does not have sickle cell.
Let me stop you there, because I'm sure that we need some clarity regarding that. Dr. Taylor, she mentioned fusion. What is she referring to?
I expect that she probably had some type of stem cell transplant, which is curative therapy.
Okay, which is what you spoke about earlier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When did she have this done, Teresa?
Last year, she had her daddy's, she couldn't have find no one that had the same DNA the way that she needed that. Now she only has her father's DNA right now because he gave her a bone marrow transplant that worked.
Okay.
So he was a half match.
Mm-hmm. And you did speak. Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Half match. Half the DNA comes from your mom, half from your dad. Your dad's a half match. He was the stem cell donor, and in this case, it worked. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Again, experimental, but for the appropriate patient who's really at high risk, and this sounds like a high-risk case with two terrible diseases, certainly appropriate.
Yeah. Well, Teresa, thank you for sharing with us. We appreciate it, and we wish your granddaughter continued good health. Thank you so much. Before the break, we were talking about the impact of sickle cell anemia on women. Talk to me about women that, first of all, are expecting and what impact this disease may have as they're trying to carry a child to term and the entire impact for women.
So women in general, the first thing that I'm in my research life, I'm a pain researcher, and women feel pain more intensely than men. I didn't expect that when I got into that field.
But they handle it better.
They
That's what they'll
handle
tell.
It better. Of course they do.
Of course. That's what they'll tell you.
I was expecting that they'd be more resistant to it because you go through childbirth. But right. That is not the case. They feel pain physiologically more than men do, but they do handle it much better. Second is menses can be a very painful experience for any woman having your period. And that exacerbates sickle cell pain crises. So it's the worst of everything. And then if you get pregnant, most women have more frequent pain crises. And it can be up to once a month. And you're, by definition, a higher risk obstetrical patient for having a baby. So you need to be in a very specialized hospital setting with good obstetricians and good hematologist who can take care of sickle cell.
But with all of the pain management, with the list of therapies, drug therapies that you mentioned, I would imagine that the common sense is you don't want to give a woman who is expecting an opioid when she's pregnant, and I don't know, so help me with that.
Sure. You don't want to, but in this very special case, you do it because I think Chadrick can tell us exactly how bad the pain is.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires very powerful opioids. Children who are born, they go to the neonatal intensive care unit. They're usually smaller than normal and usually born a bit premature. That's an ideal situation. And the neonatologists are very adept at dealing with children who have been exposed to opioids, and it's really not a problem.
Chadrick, do you have a pain therapy? Do you take medicine to deal with the pain?
I actually used to carry ibuprofen and morphine, oxycodone. Not so much anymore. As I've been getting older, I've had less crises. Before it was once a month, 1 to 3 months apart. Now it's about 6 months apart.
Okay.
That just might be exercise and my diet. Mm-hmm. To be honest, mm-hmm. And hydration.
Yeah, because the doctor did mention hydration before. How might your diet impact this?
Let's see. So, my mother always encouraged me to drink to eat iron rich foods.
Mm-hmm.
I stay away from caffeine. So I don't drink any soda, no coffee, unless mm-hmm. it's, midterms. but yeah, that when I do, I definitely put myself at a lot of risk for it. And also I've noticed with my sickle cell, stress also has an impact on it.
Mm.
I tend to, my last 3 crises have been around finals.
Okay. Well, that's everybody, right? Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah. So, but you said, you're from Kingston, Jamaica. So, many of the, those wonderful traditional foods, whether, it's oxtail or beef patties or ackee fish or any of those things, have you had to give pushback to some of the things that, or do you just add to, what you're used to? How do you deal with that?
I try to cook most of my food.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is traditional Jamaican food. Or I'll just look up recipes. Mm-hmm. But in general I just try to stay away from fatty food. So
yeah.
I try to stay away from, mm-hmm. even a lot of salt. I'm not sure, if that actually has any great impact on my crises, but I would think that anything concerning the lining of my, my arteries would have an impact on
the blood flow. Healthy as possible.
Yeah.
I have a few minutes left. Your final, you know, thoughts on where we are right now with treatment and possible cures for this, Dr. Taylor.
So I think this is your classic good news, bad news. It's the best of times and it's the worst of times. To put this in perspective, sickle cell is the most common genetic disease in the United States, primarily affecting 10% of the population. So it's a big problem. We need to keep our initiative up and really keep on our politicians to fund research to look for a cure. I think that would go a long way. It is an exciting time. The National Institutes of Health has just announced a big cure initiative. We'll see where that goes. There really have to be the right focus and the right mission to – it's like flying to the moon. You want to accomplish this, but you got to have the right tools to – reach the moon. The second is that there are a number of drugs that are in trials right now that are coming out. They're all funded by drug companies, and this is not a sickle cell isn't a great money maker in medicine. It's absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of this daily as I look at our bill sheets. But it is laudable that there are companies that are really putting their money where their mouth is and really developing helpful drugs. They're doing the experiments. I don't know if any of these are going to be helpful, but I think we need to see what happens.
And before I go, Chadrick is here under a scholarship related to sickle cell. Talk to me a little bit about that, because college is expensive, as we know, and so it's good that you're able to go.
Yeah. So I was recently awarded the a scholarship from Glory's Hope Foundation, which was founded by Jeremiah Atachau. He's a football player for the Nets. He just went over to the Nets. For the Jets.
Jets.
I'm sorry.
He was a San Diego Charger linebacker, and he's just signed with the Jets.
Okay. Right. Yeah. They could use help.
Yeah. He's good.
No comment.
We're glad that you're here, and we certainly wish you the best of luck and the best of health. What's your major?
I am a senior biology major, mm-hmm. psychology, chemistry minor. And I hope to be a physician.
Well, it looks like you are well on your way. Well on your way. Gentlemen, I want to thank all of you for coming in, Dr. James Taylor, Dr. Emmanuel Tay, and Chadrick Garrick. Again, good luck to you.
Thank you.
And good health to you as well. And of course, as I mentioned, the information about the sickle cell event on September 29th will be posted on WHUR.com this evening, as always. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM. Channel 141 for this Monday, September 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.
The Howard University.